Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Kelly, Coach Kelly, I need you. I'm lying on the couch. I swear to God, I can't take one more thing.
Tell me.
One more thing on my plate, and I'm cracking. Can I crack?
Yeah.
I wrote a blog this last week that was hysterical. It was about being up from depression.
Yes, so, I love that article.
Did you see the picture with the Humpty
yes!
Dumpty, the big egg on a couch, on the therapist chair?
Yeah.
He says, can you try to visualize not falling off the wall again?
So,
I swear, that's what it feels like for my week this week.
But you're leaving tomorrow, thank God.
I know. And for me, the challenge is going to be, how do you leave behind all these things that are serious and important, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like these are trivial little matters that I'm getting all in a huff about. It's literally some really serious
issues,
you know? And it's like, okay, but I have to go because people need to understand that I have to take a rest.
And you need
also.
It.
Also,
yes.
So
I'm on your couch. I have a feeling the first day might be a little tough. You'll be thinking about it, but then you'll feel better and it'll be okay.
It's going to be a serious challenge around technology because I am, like everybody, tied to the phone. You said something great about, I think 2 weeks ago or something, you said you actually turn your phone off at 7:30.
Yeah, like 7:30
or 8. It's amazing.
Because you know what? First of all, it's like you don't even want to talk to me. I'm tired. I'm like not in the best frame of mind. But yeah, that's my time to be with my husband. I don't want to be, you know, I've been on the phone all day. I want to relax and I don't want to be bothered. It's like ignorance is bliss. I don't want to know what you have to tell me at that time. I'm much better at like 5 or 6 in the morning, ironically.
It's a wonderful tactic. I'm going to try to employ that for the next 2 weeks.
Yes, I would love to hear how that went.
So like, I'm not going to tell you how I am because that would mean that my phone were on.
I'm not going to ask you.
I'm not going to give you updates. I'm not posting on Facebook.
No.
I'm going radio silent.
Perfect.
Okay, awesome. And you're going to carry the show for the next
couple
weeks. So that'll be awesome.
Very cool.
And we love our listeners and we love your phone calls. So if anybody would like to give us a call, please do so at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Or give us an email anytime. Okay, I'm hogging the time. How about you?
What do you mean?
What's up?
Oh, I was like, what do you mean? Well, it's so weird. So I have my son in the waiting room right now. He wanted to skip camp and he gave me the puppy eyes. And I'm a sucker. I am a sucker. And then he's got the Jewish guilt down. Like, he's like, Mom, I'm tired. And like, I just.
Oh, and I saw him too. He said, and I was sick.
Yeah, as you can see, real sick. Sick in the head. No, he got me. He got me. And then I was like, all right. But I was like, but I'm doing my radio show. And I was like, and you better be good. And guess what? I forgot the charger to the iPad. So he just banged on the glass. And he's like, but God forbid the iPad goes out. So I gave him my phone. And I think all is well. But it's kind of cool. I'm glad that he's seeing me in this, you know, not just a mom, but a working person.
Yes.
And it's kind of cool, I think, for him to see that. So I was glad to bring him.
Did you block international calling?
Oh, that's smart. I know. It's true. It's so true. Knowing him, he'd be like, oh, I met a friend.
In China.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
And knowing him, he could pick up speaking Chinese within 30 seconds.
It's
so
true.
Bright.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, it was really funny because we went to SeaWorld in San Diego. And we met a couple of people from China. And he literally looks at them and was like, ni hao ma. And yeah, because he just remembers things. It's like incredible. Wow. And they were like, oh my God. You know, they were like going nuts. It was so funny.
So
he
cute.
Just, one time you tell him something, he never forgets it. It's amazing.
He's so special too. He's got the same highlights in his hair that you have.
But his are natural.
So cute. And those blue eyes. There's no way you could say no to those puppy eyes.
Well, it was so funny. One more story and then I'll stop bragging about my little one. But I went swimming. I think it was maybe a year or two ago. And we were in the bathroom changing and these like 13-year-old girls come over and they're like, oh, he's so cute and look at his eyes. And I was like, back off. Like mama cub came out and I was like, no, you didn't. I was like, he is my, like, it was just so funny. And I'm like, oh my God, like he's gonna have girlfriends. It's so funny. But yeah,
he probably already has some in his mind.
Oh,
you know?
I know. I remember my crushes, like when I was in kindergarten. I remember Jeff Jacobs. He's still
Mitch
cute.
Cohen. Oh my gosh.
Two Jews, you know? It's so funny.
So funny. Actually, so I had him. He was the only boy at my first grade, kindergarten, something like that. Fifth year or sixth year, five or six. boy to come to my birthday party, swim party. He came.
No.
There were like 20 of my girlfriends. You know, you invite the class,
sure.
right? You don't invite. I mean,
yeah.
he was the only boy
God.
That came. Aww. He was so cute. And he grew up to be quite the, he was an athlete.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And his mother saved my life. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Yeah. My bicycle accident going down a hill. And
yeah.
I didn't have brakes. And I don't know, somebody messed with my bike.
Oh, my God.
I was like 35 miles an hour down the hill with no brakes. And there was a red light at the corner. This was a really busy intersection. I fell off my bike, landed head first on the concrete in a pool of blood for 4 hours. Nobody stopped.
Stop.
His mother driving up the hill when I was 17
God.
Years old actually stopped, called an ambulance. So
are you kidding
I'm indebted
me?
To him for life.
Oh
yes.
My God. Mitch.
Mitch.
Let's give a shout out.
Shout out to Mitch.
Mitch's mom.
What about your boyfriend?
Jeff Jacobs. Brilliant. I think I picked him smart young. I was smart to know. No, he was a very smart kid. I remember that. And now he... I ran into him. He looks like Noah Wiley from ER. Just really cute. You know, like a cute guy. And really bright. Does stuff with politics in D.C. He had a baby. So he's doing well.
Oh,
isn't that funny,
sweet.
Though? Yeah. It is
good
kind of
stories.
Funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Last week, we had a great guest. This is somebody that you actually
yes.
know.
Uh-huh.
So it was sex therapist Dr. Dan Politz. And he was awesome. We learned
yes.
about the top misconceptions when it comes to sex and relationships, mm-hmm. mindfulness with regards to sex, and addictions, effects of pornography on
yes.
intimacy, and a whole lot more. So if you missed that show, please...
Yeah,
go
back
on.
It was really interesting.
Yeah.
I really liked the mindfulness part of it. And, you know, his whole thing was like really just being in tune with your partner when you're making love and not, you know, getting into that fantasy, but just really trying to connect. I really liked that.
I also love hearing when a guy is the one who comes out and says, you know, pornography, probably not such a good idea, because so many women will say that.
Yes.
And then the guys go, really? You don't know what you're talking about and all that.
So
it was actually really
yes.
enlightening to hear him be able to talk about that
mm-hmm.
as well from a very clinical perspective, a knowledgeable perspective, a
yep.
research perspective, and it was really fascinating.
Yeah.
So, again, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, and we have a beautifully, wonderfully amazing woman in studio with
Yay!
Us today, who is a heartthrob for me. I love this woman. I got to share about 5 years of working with her, like actually at some of the rehab places in Malibu, and we got to share a whole bunch of stories. And her name is Dr. Erica Scott. She has 30 years of professional experience working with those who have complex trauma and co-occurring addictions. As a first-year professional in 1985, her clients had the lowest, I can never say this word,
recidivism
thank
yeah.
you, rate of any therapist in a 200-bed hospital. As the trauma therapist for Sierra Tucson, she was granted the Alumni Recognition Award. Over the last 15 years, she has published research in peer-reviewed journals on self-mutilation by dissociative disordered individuals and her theory of creative arts therapy for trauma and addiction treatment. In the general press, she has published on topics such as disabilities, the psychology of human slavery, and ritual cults. This is one hell of a woman,
I
gotta
tell you.
Oh my God,
amazing.
I know, we're
you
a little threatened here.
Yeah.
This gets better. In California, Dr. Scott, also known as E. Hitchcock Scott, holds licenses as a licensed professional clinical counselor and a licensed advanced alcohol and drug counselor, and she's board certified registered art therapist. Now, this is the one I love. At age 11, she walked in the eye of a hurricane.
Oh my God.
Welcome, Dr. Erica. She's sitting there. She's like, uh-oh, now what do I say? Please do tell us. What
yes.
does that mean?
What does that mean?
Well, that's funny. I didn't expect that question.
Oh, okay.
I believe that we're shaped by our experiences, and especially novel experiences and beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of those experiences that had extreme novelty and beauty. I was 11. We had the Hurricane Cleo.
Oh, my God.
In 1964, I had just turned 11. And a family friend was trying to educate me about hurricanes. And this hurricane had been particularly frightening. 150-odd people had died from this hurricane as it traveled through the Caribbean. It slowed down as it hit the coast of Florida. But it was also a long-lasting hurricane. It lasted about 2 weeks. So
wow.
I've never heard of a hurricane
yeah.
lasting that
wow.
long. And so we had seen the glass bending even on our the glass panes to our door. The winds were fierce enough that the glass was bending
oh
a little bit.
Oh, it's frightening.
So
So I don't even know where you're going with this. At this point, I'd be running the opposite direction.
So, you know, we had gas lanterns because the electricity was out. Mm-hmm. We were listening to a battery-operated radio. So part of it was kind of exciting and thrilling, but part of it was frightening. And so our family friend was a natural teacher. And he said, you know, he was trying to explain the eye of a hurricane. And mm-hmm. we were just having a hard time understanding how the winds could blow so fiercely. Then there would be a period of no wind. And then the winds could come back very quickly after the eye of the hurricane. And so he was trying to explain what I imagine he was probably talking about centrifugal forces. But he said, well, we should walk in the eye of a hurricane.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
So did you know at 11 to be afraid, or were you just more excited?
I was both.
Okay.
Because I'd seen the glass bend, I was not unaware of the power of the wind.
Right.
But also, it was thrilling.
That's cool.
And, of course, my mother was shrieking.
Yeah.
She was like, no way, you're not taking my children. I think this included my younger brother, who was about 4 years younger. You're not letting my children walk outside in the middle of a hurricane. So he managed to calm my mother down.
Wow.
Which was a task. And then he told us, this is a privilege, and we're going to walk out in the storm, but I want you to stay close to the wall of the house. So he had us inch out mm-hmm. the patio around the side of the house and then stay close to the wall. And then he was paying attention to the weather reports and the movement. He was tracking the movement of the hurricane. So he chose the middle of the storm.
Wow.
So that we had a cushion of time.
Oh, my God. So he was really methodical about
it. He was very methodical about
it.
And I remember my first impression was a little bit disappointment. I thought there would be an obvious differential between blowing wind and calm. And to me, it looked a lot like after the end of a storm, because there were coconuts everywhere, furniture blown around a little bit, branches were down. But the more we stood next to the house observing, the quality of light was very different. I couldn't have put my finger on it at the time, but the barometric pressure was very different.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a very unique, something I've never experienced before or since, quality of the weather.
Wow.
And so that, in some of it's nonverbal, which is one reason I love nonverbal processes.
Yes.
But some of it I cannot articulate in words very clearly, but
it's so cool.
It was very precious.
And I want to say for our listeners, Dr. Scott has the coolest hair.
Oh, my gosh.
So
the
neat.
Purple
and it's
hair.
Got some purple in it. And so I just feel like the story just makes sense. It's like someone who walks in the eye of a hurricane is going to have like purple hair. You know
right.
what I mean?
It's beautifully gray.
Yeah.
Right? Do you put any color on that part?
Oh,
no,
really?
Just naturally. Yeah. She's thick. I'm so envious.
Yes.
She has tons of hair. Yes.
Thick,
she's
beautiful
just a
hair.
Beautiful woman in all areas. That is a precious story.
It's crazy.
Thank you. But then you know you're sitting in that space knowing that the next round of the storm is coming.
That's right. And so at some point, our friend said, okay, it's time to go back inside because mm-hmm. we need to have a cushion of time, because when the wind comes back, it can come back very fiercely, very quickly.
Yeah.
And so it's not safe to stay out here any longer. So we inched back along the side of the house into the patio and inside the house when my mother was so relieved.
Wow. I happen to know that you also had an encounter with a mountain lion.
Oh, no.
Right?
Serious?
Not so close, but close enough, right?
I did.
Yes, and I don't know if you want to talk about that, but I know this is why I so am attracted to Erica's energy, because I have fantasies of mountain lions.
Really?
All the time, like constantly.
Oh, my God.
And I really don't want to manifest that. I really
don't.
Yeah,
exactly.
But there's something so incredibly appealing
powerful.
About that. Yeah, it's the animal that I just resonate with in terms of...
Were you,
of,
like, so upset about this whole Cecil thing? Remember with the guy who
killed,
the dentist who killed the mountain? I know.
Yes. Oh,
horrible.
And then they found three baby mountain lions somewhere. Anyway,
yes.
off track. But yes,
yeah.
Erica has some amazing stories, which is probably what brought you to the world of the creative arts and art therapy and working with drama and all that. So if you can, why don't you tell us your first experience with art and art therapy?
I'd be happy to do that. I have a hearing loss that I was born with, and I believe that when you have a challenge in one of your senses, especially as critical as hearing, that you tend to develop or overdevelop in a healthy way to compensate some of your other senses to function in the world and to cope. And so I had several challenges because my mother, a socialite debutante, was also alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And so she drank while she was pregnant with me. And the exposure to alcohol in utero, as you know, is a teratogen. It's a toxin. Mm-hmm. And so I was born with the hearing loss.
Oh, my God.
And some other challenges. I was underweight, developmentally delayed.
Oh, my God.
And they actually thought I was retarded. So now I have a doctorate. So obviously that's not true. But at the time, they thought I was. And I'm using the old term on purpose because that's the term they used when I was young.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's out of
out of practice for, for now, thankfully. Right. Exactly.
Right. So I had failed fourth grade, and I was on the way to failing it a second time.
Oh, wow.
When I overheard my fourth grade teacher turn to my mother and say, you know, she really loves art. Why don't you get her art lessons?
Like, oh, my God.
Why don't you find her a private class or, you know, something of that nature? And I can remember thinking, that is a great idea.
Yes. Yeah. Woohoo, right? Yeah, exactly.
And so my mother found a man named Jim Compton, who was, I think, more beatnik than hippie, but he was both.
Yeah.
He wore a beret. He had an earring at a time when no one wore earrings.
Yeah.
He had long hair, and he wore flip-flops. And I can remember my mother in her Lily Pulitzer shift, teasing him about his long hair. And so I had private lessons with Jim Compton.
Wow.
And he taught me how to paint.
That's so cool.
Yay, Jim.
And he taught me how to paint with oils, which is still one of my favorite mediums. And entering his world of color and shape and form and light and dark, the chiaroscuro type looking at art, did fairly dramatic paintings, but he was classically trained, and so he taught me how to paint, and he also would take me with him to go paint murals at various sites, like doctor's offices. He would paint, like, nature scenes on their walls.
Wow.
So I got to fill in a little bit, even though I was only 9 years old.
Wow. Oh, wow, that's so cool.
This is before Hurricane.
Yes, it was. And he helped my self-esteem so much.
Oh.
And on top of that, just brought joy to my life.
Yeah.
Another way of seeing that matched the fact that I was a great observer already, partly enforced by the fact that I was compromised hearing-wise. So by the end of fifth grade, I was reading college level.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's awesome and impressive.
Isn't that impressive?
Yeah.
It just goes to show that, like, once you give somebody, kids, whoever, like, what they're interested in, they light up and they become, you know, they're enlightened. They're ready to roll. That's so cool. I love hearing
it's
that.
It's so sad how many parents won't take the time and the effort. They just, they accept whatever labels are given to people.
Yes.
And it's, oh, my teacher, you know, my kid's teacher says, blah, blah, that's what it must be. And they don't question. And then you have those who question everything and they won't accept anything that might be actually in front of them because they go into denial. So that's tough. But this is impressive. Is that, then did you already at that time believe that you were going to do something with art in the future or no idea?
I really, beyond maybe being an artist, and I was a professional artist for a while. I've taught college level art. My first serious job out of college, I was, believe it or not, the curator of exhibits of a small museum.
Oh, cool.
And so I organized local exhibits in our, it was more like a community center, but it was officially a museum. And then I've also been the director of the board of an avant-garde photo gallery and wrote grants and directed the exhibits for that photo gallery in Dallas, Allen Street Gallery. But also I studied art in Europe, I have an undergraduate degree in art. I have a master's in education with art emphasis. And then my doctorate in psychology has emphasis in the creative arts psychotherapy. So I embody more than just the visual arts in my practice with clients. I include journal writing, singing, dance, movement, poetry writing.
So cool. She has the coolest office
in
Malibu
really?
With is it thousands of these little figurines?
Oh, my
thousands.
God.
This collection, like, unbelievable. Like, Disney characters and ancient art characters.
Just so cool.
I know it's a little bit off subject,
but
tell
us
a little bit. We are.
Yeah,
we have a phone call.
Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Do you have a question for Dr. Deborah, Coach Kelly, or Dr. Scott, the art therapist?
No, I'm calling a live video stream number for listening to the radio show.
Yeah, but this is the radio show. Did you have a question for us?
Yeah, I was trying to listen in on one of the radio shows that's currently on right now.
With Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly?
I'm sorry?
Are you trying to call Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly? That's the one that's on currently.
Right.
Right, so that's us. You got us. What's your question?
I don't have a question. I was calling to listen in.
Oh, okay. So if you go to the latalkradio.com,
right,
then you can click on the show streaming live, and it won't call us directly in the studio. Got it. Okay. Well, good.
We have a listener.
Yay! Hey, 75,000 listeners.
I know, that's incredible.
We hit 75,000 listeners.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So, no nerves there, Dr. Scott.
Exactly.
People are listening to you.
But I want to know who your favorite artist is and maybe who inspires you.
Well, that's interesting. It changes.
Okay.
Georgia O'Keeffe, of course.
Yes.
Because when I studied art therapy, she was one of the few female artists in my art history book. And the image of a Georgia O'Keeffe painting was about an inch square, which, as you can imagine, does so little justice
In the textbook, right?
My goodness. Amazing paintings.
Yeah.
And her very feminine view of looking at life and flowers and landscapes.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
And her ability to pave the way for some of the rest of us.
Yeah.
It was very moving. I would say Cartier-Bresson as a photographer.
Okay.
Because of how much he embodied synchronicity
uh-huh.
in his work. He would set up scenes or wait at that a spot where he thought synchronicity might happen, and he would
That's
wait
cool.
for hours for
yeah.
something in that space and
right.
time to happen. So I adore his work.
What about you, Deborah? Who do you like?
Oh, don't ask me that, because that means I have to know names.
Oh, yeah. I know. You probably just know images.
I can tell you this, that I went to one of those auctions where they uh-huh. serve you tequila and do this, an art auction with two of my favorite friends, and I ended up buying a Billy Bangston. I have no idea about Billy
this
Bangston.
Is hilarious.
Do you know Billy Bangston?
No.
I bought one. It's on my wall.
It's a great story, though.
It's
and
a
every
great
time
story.
You see it, you're like, I remember that
bid
night.
And I kept bidding. I'm like, is this a lot? Is this
right.
too much? I had no idea.
Oh God,
it
crazy.
Actually cost me more to frame the friggin' thing
than to buy it.
Yes. But
really
it told me it'll be worth a lot more, you know, when he's gone. Right.
Right, then
I love the Susan Rios, the teddy bears. Do you know Susan Rios?
I don't know her.
Okay, she does a lot of things with
cute
animals and stuff. So I have a matching birthday girl bear and a matching birthday boy bear. This is the first piece of art that I actually ever bought. Like it was an actual oil painting.
Yeah.
It's numbered. It's signed.
Oh, cool.
It's very exciting. They're up in my sitting room in my house, and I look at them and I go, oh, I bought art. Yes, very
That's
exciting.
Cool.
So I can tell you a photographer I really like.
My daughter. Yes.
Oh my God! If you say that, that's a huge compliment.
Yes.
Oh, you should see her. In fact, she should be a guest on your show.
Oh my
her
God! You should
amazing.
Send me her work. I definitely want to see it.
Okay. I'll see. Yes. Tiffany Luptak. TiffanyLuptakPhotography.com. Please
so
check
cool.
her out. She's amazing. She's so gifted and so talented.
Wow.
Yes. Erica gave the stamp of approval of her talent.
That's
and
amazing.
It was like that is high.
That's great.
Her
high.
Vision
yes.
and her competency. She has both.
Oh, you are so sweet. And if you just tuned in, you're listening to Talk It Out with Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
And today we have our special guest, Dr. Erica Scott. She's so many things. She's so wonderful with purple hair and an art therapist. What more can we say? Purple streaks, really. Her
yes.
hair is lovely gray with this. She's so fun. Anyway, so give us a call. Give us a call. My voice is changing. Hormonal. Yes.
Give us a call or else.
At 323-203-0815, or you can email us on a little bit more of a serious subject, because I know this is one of Erica's specialties, and I really do want her to describe this.
Sure.
Can you share with our listeners, please, dissociative disordered women? Dissociative disorders, it's such a complicated...
Can you explain for the for our listeners, just because I don't think they would know what that means?
Yes. Well, we all dissociate. Mm-hmm. We all have moments of trance. For most of us, it's a very positive thing. How many of us have made an art piece or written something and time just seemed to fly by, and then we're like, oh, what happened?
You know, or driving, you don't know how you got someplace, even though you're, you know, mechanically watching the road, but you were just in another world, right?
So that's called highway hypnosis, and it happens to all of us, and it's normative that there are times you drive up in your driveway and, like, you're
right,
on the home.
What
happened? Did I stop at the stop sign on the way in the on the block? So that happens to everybody, and children are much more highly hypnotizable than adults. Mm. About 50% of children have high hypnotizability.
Oh, cool.
And that is, I think, in part because they are learning so much at the ages from birth to first grade that it helps them be more receptive.
Now you know what to do with London.
I was
you
just,
talk to him.
You're getting very
sleepy. That's her younger son who would be doing cartwheels in the room with us today. Yes,
rapping in the microphone.
So when there is trauma at a very early age, and there are many hypotheses about this, and some have been challenged, and then there's plenty of evidence to support that if there's trauma, especially if there's a betrayal involved.
Like sexual abuse or physical abuse.
Or profound abandonment, neglect. And especially if it's repeated over time.
Yeah.
And the combination of high hypnotizability, a child's imagination, something that happens almost instantaneously is as if you're watching yourself. We've all experienced that depersonalization or derealization a little bit, where it seems like we're watching ourselves in a moment. That's not uncommon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the more that happens, the more that creates a split in the personality. And so over time, that can become worse. It's very functional at the time of childhood because it helps the child maintain relationships and be present enough for the good stuff in life. It helps submerge some of the trauma just far enough away, and that varies how much. So so that they can actually be in school, be in relationship with people, and receive some of the blessings of life.
So is it like Sybil, the movie?
That's the extreme end, and that's a very Hollywood version.
Okay.
But in fact, I've met Cornelia Wilbur, who was her psychiatrist.
Oh, wow.
And so there was a real story there, and of course, Hollywood
has
their version of it.
Yeah.
So it's not always so obvious.
Yeah.
We all have ego states. That's normative. This is how I describe it to some of my clients in the past. The problem isn't that you have ego states, is that you are bringing out some of the wrong ego states for the wrong relationships. And this goes back to even some of the earlier I kind of socialized versions of ego states, but where you might have a child part trying to relate to sex with your spouse when you really need to have an adult self in relationship with your sexual relationship with your spouse.
A lot of this is now covered when people talk about befriending and loving your inner child. I mean, those are really easy words for people to understand, where you're making a relationship with parts of yourself that were probably secluded or separated from your core identity. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I find, too, that sometimes people have, that it seems as if they feel as if they're living life from a child's perspective. Mm-hmm. Or especially if they're under stress, like public speaking, They don't feel their full height.
Yeah.
They feel smaller and diminished somehow. Mm-hmm. And so a word for that might be regression.
Yes.
And so part of treatment is about strengthening the adult self to take care of the other more vulnerable mm-hmm. parts of self and integrate all those parts.
And I could see how art therapy would be so powerful yes. in that, as opposed to just regular talk therapy, which has its place. But when somebody is that regressed or that dissociated, to be able to capture words, to be able mm-hmm. to articulate that would be so impossible. So what did you discover in your work with art therapy? And
well, there are many reasons that art is particularly suited for trauma work. One is that trauma can be or tends to be stored imagistically in the right side of the brain. And then also when people are trying to talk about trauma, the Broca's area becomes disengaged on occasion. And
that's an area of the brain associated with language.
Absolutely, uh-huh. in the front left lobe. And that's the part of the brain that helps you translate an internal experience into words.
Mm.
And so, and then how trauma is stored, and then also shame, mm-hmm. denial, minimization, all those good old-fashioned cognitive defenses we all have to protect us against emotional pain, minimization, rationalization. I like to say that, because I work with alcoholics and drug addicts as well, mm-hmm. that just as alcoholics will tend to say, "But officer, I only had one drink."
Yeah,
trauma right. survivors will tend to say, "But I was only molested once."
Yes, right. I have heard this. I'm sorry, I have to
please
because I'm like, it's just so true. I had a client maybe, I don't know, 3 months ago, and she told me that her mother dragged her into her room and beat her. And I said, "Wow, that must have been really hard." And she said, "Oh, well, it was only one, you know, a few times." Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who had it worse. Mm-hmm. And so exactly, they totally minimize it. Right. And is that a way of a coping?
It's a way to keep your relationships with the person who hurt you when yeah. that's a wow. familial relationship.
Yeah.
I have a part of my interviewing style now that's changed significantly over the years in uh-huh. working with people with trauma is that just to say the words, "Were you abused as a child?" 99% of the time, no.
Oh.
No, I can't use those words because okay. then they're identifying as one of those. If
yes.
I was one of those, uh-huh. how could I still have this relationship with my mom? Oh, so when you used to act out or do whatever, uh-huh. you know, what would mom do? What
yes.
would dad do? You know, what were the
right.
boundaries? What were the this?
Yeah.
But use other words
right.
that would allow it to be safe enough to say, yeah, you know, my mom would
yeah.
do whatever, you know,
exactly.
and then I can sort of get a reading on that more empathetically as opposed to, "Were you abused?"
Right.
It's like, yeah.
They get
people,
scared off and it's like,
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, way earlier on in my career, I had this one guy who came in, and that was one of my standard questions. You know,
yeah.
they tell you to ask because you want to find out if there's
sure.
child abuse and blah, blah, blah. So I asked this question, no, 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 and no. And then as the therapy unfolded, thankfully, he stayed for a very long time, and we worked on many, many, many things. And he had been so severely battered and abused
yeah.
by his real father and then his stepfather
oh.
that it was such a nightmare. And he had to have that time and space to be able to feel safe enough to simply just
really?
Tell me. The first incident that he could tell me was so mild compared to all the other ones he
yeah.
ended up disclosing years in. So
that's
I can just
true.
Imagine, you know, if I would have known you then, I would have certainly sent him to
okay.
you because I know
right.
you would have done wonders
well,
to help him.
Establishing trust is so important
yes.
yeah.
because that's what's been betrayed. So two resources are easy to access resources. One is my recent article in Renew Magazine. So Renew Magazine is mm-hmm. an addiction magazine where
mm-hmm.
I've published about this very phenomenon of
okay. yeah.
How sometimes under stress we may feel as if we're smaller inside of our body than,
mm-hmm.
and I present it as a more normative phenomenon than pathological. So because of the way I see people in healing, I am less inclined to pathologize some things that are trauma responses because
absolutely
they,
normal responses to abnormal events.
Yes,
yes,
thank you. Very well said. And then the other is my own website, www.artspeaksoutloud. You can access it through artspeaksoutloud.com or artspeaksoutloud.org.
Oh, cool.
Yes, if you just tuned in, you are listening to Dr. Deborah, of course, and Coach Kelly, mm-hmm. and then our wonderful Dr. Erica Scott, who is teaching us a lot about trauma, art therapy, and yes, her website at any time you want to take a peek, artspeaksoutloud.com, artspeaksoutloud.com. Yeah, do you have another
I'm
question?
I'm sorry, I have a weird
question and thought. If I were to draw something right now, would you be able to kind of, you know, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for?
You have to understand, we had a psychic-ish person on the show, and Kelly talks about constipation, her own. Like, she has, yeah, and vomit and all that. So when she says that she truly would like to know, if she writes, puts something on paper, you can give it to her. You can
That's
tell
so
her.
Funny. Yeah,
you
know, like
you're in a psychotic stream of consciousness,
yeah,
or
like,
whatever.
Are you able to interpret it? And
That's a really good question, because mm-hmm. along with that question, it incorporates a fair amount of myth. So,
oh, okay.
So it's a really good question to bring up in, yeah, the show. So, yes, there are some universal symbols. Mm-hmm. The problem with interpreting art is that symbols can be very idiosyncratic, which, yeah, means unique to that person.
Sure.
Because of their life experience. So one way I like to explain it is, and it's a pretty intense explanation, but people understand it, is the swastika.
Yeah.
Means something very different in Germany than it does with Native Americans, and all mm-hmm. the difference is that it's reversed. Mm-hmm. Another way I like to say it, because it speaks to how the swastika means different things even to people from the same epoch.
Yeah.
So, for example, and this is not a comfortable example, but obviously for people who survived the concentration camps or didn't, mm-hmm. the swastika is a horrible,
yeah,
I don't even have words,
sure,
for the despair and grief and horror mm-hmm. attached to the symbol. But if you think about young Hitler youth who are innocent but being shaped and programmed mm-hmm. to a national identity,
yeah,
for them it was a symbol of pride,
yes,
and connection and community. And so that alone illustrates how different one symbol, yeah, can have meaning for different people.
Sure.
And then even the Hitler youth that survived the war, grew up,
yeah,
and at the end of the war, they may have totally changed their own view of the meaning of swastika
mm-hmm.
as information was revealed. Maybe not, but
sure,
very possible that they, so even the same person,
yeah,
within a period of 5 or 10 years can change their relationship or uh-huh. the meaning of the same symbol.
Absolutely.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Does that
based
make-
on your own experience? Sure.
Well,
right,
yeah, you know, my dad, Holocaust survivor, deceased now, but yeah, yeah, I mean, what you're speaking is exactly what it was for me growing up with yeah. my father's experience. That mm-hmm. symbol is just, it makes me violently ill, to the
sure.
point where I actually want to
yeah.
vomit. You know, it's just that, it's that vile. Because yeah. of the compassion and the empathy.
Sure.
And yet, yes, I can hear exactly what you're saying and how
yeah.
that would be perceived so differently. It's so much like dream interpretation,
yes.
too. Like, you'll get a book on the symbols of dreams and
yes.
you're gonna interpret your dreams and say, really? Like,
yeah.
I have a funny story about this. You're going to appreciate this. And
yeah.
hopefully you'll appreciate this too, Erica. So when I was learning in graduate school about the Rorschach
yes.
is the
sure.
ink blot. So learning to do testing, right? So, you know, they weren't teaching us enough about the condition under which you're giving the test. Has
right.
a big impact on you know the test taker and the test
sure.
administrator. So I decided to give it to my boyfriend because I needed a
oh,
subject
oh
we
god.
Had to practice, right? And I was wearing a bikini. So
oh my god! So everything was sexual.
Everything was sexual. And then when I had to interpret his results, he turned out to be like psychotic beyond belief, because that's how the interpretations
yes.
were of all these things.
Sure.
If anybody could see me now, which you two can, I'd be embarrassed
very
right
blushing,
now speaking
but this is
about
so
that.
Funny.
So funny. So
true.
That's just to lighten up that yeah. moment a little bit, because
thank
swastikas
you.
Make me
right.
a little
well,
so nauseated.
And also the viewer or the listeners as well. So I'm really glad
yeah.
you said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
It is make it a little lighter.
Yeah, it's a funny story.
But it's an illustration that people don't forget. And
absolutely.
So,
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
So is it better to then ask the client, oh, mm-hmm. hey, you know, what does this mean to you? And then they're able to kind of speak their mind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there is interpretation. A Dr. Gusick has written a book, Art Therapy on Trial.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh.
instead of content, he analyzes quality of drawing.
Okay.
And he diagnosed for an important case via the quality of drawing.
Oh,
but
really?
Quality not as in whether it's good or bad as an artist, but quality
emotional.
In terms of what, yes, what like, actually is coming through in
yeah.
that, like
Not even emotional. It would be quality of line or color choices or shapes or juxtaposition, spatial relationships on the page.
But see, I'd be scared because I'm not the best artist, and I feel like mine would look like a five-year-old drew it, and I wonder.
Okay, so most people in America, their last drawing or painting class is about third grade.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So I don't expect anyone to draw well.
Right.
And when I teach, I have taught medical doctors for Andrew Weil's fellows in Arizona at the University of Arizona. So when I teach them, I tease them and say, so you guys thought you would be an expert surgeon the first time you picked up a scalpel, right?
True. Such a good point. We do put a lot of pressure on ourselves.
And so I often ask them to draw with their non-dominant hand because we all know we can't draw with our non-dominant hand very well, most of us.
That would take a lot of the pressure down, right? Yeah, for sure.
It helps intervene on perfectionism or unrealistic expectations and allows people to participate more fully.
Absolutely.
Which is great.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I can see that because actually I'm just full of funny stories today. I actually won in sixth grade, I think it was in sixth grade, a painting. And this, I was so proud of myself because I was a terrible artist, but I was really practicing. Like, I practiced drawing my Roadrunner and practiced drawing my bunnies. So I took my bunny, Bugs Bunny, and I put him on the outdoor table, and I made him stay there for like 6 hours while I... Can you imagine getting a rabbit to stay still?
Oh, my God.
He trusted me. He
so
was my bunny. He sat there, and I drew the bunny, the gray and white, who's Bugs Bunny, and I won second prize in sixth grade for that, and I kept that picture. It's
no
like
way.
In my box with my, you know, my badges I won from Girl Scouts
exactly.
or earned and all that stuff. So, yeah, so this idea that there's a lot less pressure when you are drawing with your other hand
so smart.
Would be really, really...
That's really smart.
Absolutely.
I like that a lot.
Also, I believe that children can be taught drawing just as children can be taught language and how to read and write. And it's just a question of do we invest the finances and the opportunity for that to happen? And we don't.
Right.
Which that's
is,
very true.
Which is, I believe, a lack. A sad loss for our educational system.
I don't even know that there are art. Is art still part of the regular curriculum in grammar school or
I don't think so.
Middle
like
school?
My son's school is a public school, but because it's so funded so well by the parents, it is.
It
but
does
I don't,
have that.
I don't,
I don't
think
know
it's
that's
typical.
Mainstream
and
anymore.
It's only, I think, once a week, which I remember actually growing up, I think it was once a week for me too, which I wish it was more. I wish it were twice a week. I mean, everybody loves art projects.
Creative art and physical fitness. They're like gone from the curriculum. Like, how are
so
we going to have a well-rounded culture of any sort?
No.
We don't.
So,
we don't.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so much negative neuro-linguistic programming, right? Somebody says, oh, you can't draw. Or you, like parents who criticize their kids for coloring outside the lines, you know, at a certain age. Of course, why should you have to color in the lines anyways? Like, 100%. I don't like coloring books. I think coloring books ruin art. What do you think? You agree?
I completely agree. And I'm having a bit of a... dispute with some fellow art therapists about the coloring books for adults. I would like people to draw their own coloring books.
But I wonder, on the other side of it, playing devil's advocate, I mean, maybe somebody who's so kind of scared to start, maybe it's a good foundation just to kind of feel safe. Like, okay, you know, I don't have to come up with anything. I can just, you know, maybe just color in the boxes and things like that just to feel a little safer. I can see, you know, that.
But are kids ever, like, when you really give them crayons and paper when they're 2 years old, do they have any fear?
I don't know.
I
meant adults.
They do.
I meant adults.
Oh, adults.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, I meant adults.
It's kids. They,
right.
I mean,
no,
they
they're just, no, not at all. They're just happy to, you know, it's like a Jackson Pollock, you know, everything's everywhere. It's like, it's great.
My concern about that is that we are so inundated with images created by other people.
Oh, yes.
There,
yes.
You ask a group of high school kids what the meaning of different logos for different corporations, they know them all.
Oh, my God.
They know them all.
Yes. True.
Right?
So true.
How much time do we spend watching TV?
Target. Oh, my gosh. Like, do you not have that circle wherever it is? You can't even tell when a Target commercial is about to start.
Yes.
I can now. Right. Like, you're totally right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the Target dog, too.
So we're so, we're so inundated with these images, and yet... very few of us are creating our own original images, art, logos. I actually created my own logo.
Oh, you did? Oh,
I
cool.
did. And it's quite a process. I complained to a friend of mine, oh my gosh, it took me a year. And he said, you know, Erica, he said, corporations take a year and they're spending a lot of money developing their logos. But I think it's an excellent exercise to develop your own logo.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. You will so not believe this, but we only have a few minutes left.
Isn't
it has gone
amazing?
So fast. So
I just think associated during this whole
You did,
thing.
I know. We were like in another zone.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It would be really helpful if you could just share in a few words the process of art therapy. So I come to see you and mm-hmm. I say, I've been in talk therapy. Mm-hmm. I'm not really getting anywhere. What are you going to do with me? Like, how does that start? Just to take the mystery out of it for people a little bit.
I start with education, not unlike what we did today in the show. And start with some explanation to reduce shame and fear. Sometimes I tease a little bit, mm-hmm. gently.
You're good at that, actually.
Such as there may be a bad teacher that we have to banish from the room whose voice is pervasive, saying that you can't draw when mm-hmm. they didn't know what they were doing. They were incompetent, mm-hmm. poorly trained, or mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. And so I was asked at a large conference in a room of about 1,000 people, so what population is least suited for art therapy? And I said, well, in my opinion, it's the professional artist.
Yes.
Makes
so
sense.
True.
And that's also a bit of a joke, but it's also has an element of truth to it because they tend to be so concerned with how things look.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the appearance of things. What I find is if you remain present with someone as they start with scribbling, which is what toddlers do, yeah. and help them move developmentally through some of those stages, it's amazing the quality of art untrained people can do.
Wow.
Because
so
it's
cool.
Authentic.
I'm excited.
Because it's authentic, because it's personal, because it has meaning, because it has value to them. It's moving, and sometimes more moving than art I saw in my graduate school program.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. That's an on-the-spot question. Are you willing to give away a half-hour consultation for free if the first person who calls you after the show or looks at your website?
I will qualify that.
Okay.
I'm happy to give a 30-minute phone conversation or consultation in my office. Mm-hmm. I would just need to be sure that they are well suited.
Absolutely.
For safety reasons.
And this is only spontaneous. You can absolutely say no, but
no,
it feels
I'm happy
like,
to do
wow, because you've given our listeners so much information.
So insightful.
Somebody out there, I'm sure, is aching to get a little bit more from you. And so please visit Dr. Erica Scott at www.artspeaksoutloud.com. ArtSpeaks Outloud, OUTLOUD.com. What an awesome interview.
I
You're
know.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh. Dr. Erica Scott, she is so spectacular and she's my friend. So exciting.
Oh, so sweet.
Yes.
Dr. Deborah picks the best people. When I need something, she is like the go-to. She's like my personal concierge for anything LA. Doctors, you know, places.
Oh.
She's fantastic.
She chooses the best people because she is the
exactly.
best people.
You said
now
it.
Now I'm triply embarrassed. My face is bright red. Okay.
It's true.
Well, every woman in this room is amazing.
Thank you.
Three cheers for us.
Thank you so
beautiful,
much.
Beautiful, beautiful interview. Thank you
Thank
so
you.
Much. Okay, and please visit Dr. Erica Scott. You also have Dr. Erica Scott. Anybody Googles
yes.
you and they'll find you
okay,
as well.
Cool.
Okay,
yes,
Kelly, where do they find you?
It's E-R-I-C-H-A.
Don't forget that mm-hmm. H. Exactly. Okay,
and
Kelly.
Can I give them my phone number? Sorry.
Yes, you may give your phone number.
310-880-9761. 310-880-9761.
Perfect.
Beautiful.
Okay. And you can find me at www.kellymiller.com, K-E-L-L-I, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R.com. My book is Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband on Amazon.
Look at you.
I know, you did it again. You got it right. I think I've had a streak now. It's been pretty good.
Okay, I won't say it anymore. Exactly.
Don't jinx it.
You can find me at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. That was a lot of information. If you missed it, it'll be up on the website for LA Talk Radio, and you can get all the information there. Enjoy your day.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.